Welcome to another edition of We Need to Talk About Movies, brought to you by BanterFlix.com. And now, here's your host, Jim McClain.
Hello, I'm your host, Jim McClain. Welcome to the latest episode of We Need to Talk About Movies. We haven't podcast in quite some time. We were a little bit busy. We had the Dark Edges International Film Festival and just life just getting in the way of everything. But we're back, and what better movie to talk about, to bring us all back together? What better movie to bring us all back together than Ghostbusters Afterlife? It's been out in cinemas now here in the UK for just over a week. We're going to be talking about that, and I guess we might be getting a little bit spoilerific. We will try to warn you if we're going to venture into spoilers, but I can't talk about the movie on my own. Well, I can, it's just a really boring podcast. So on this episode, I'm joined by local cosplayer Aveen Henry. Hiya, Aveen.
Hiya.
And the Grumpy Gamer, I haven't called you that in a long, long time. The Grumpy Gamer, all-round nice guy, local filmmaker, one of the stars of The Sixth Sense, it's Bill Taylor.
How's it going?
I tried to big you up, Bill. And I should also add cosplayer as well.
You get fast food eater, Guinness lover, Grand Theft Auto 5 player. There's so many accolades. I don't know which one to go by. Don't know which one I'm more proud of, to be honest.
A man of many talents. Just on that note, have you tried the Guinness 0% yet, Bill? Or do you refuse to go down that way?
I have tried it.
Yeah, well, what's your thoughts?
Hopefully, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so do I. Hopefully Diageo are watching or listening. They want to send us some free Guinness.
I would advertise their 0.0 all day, every day.
If they'd send me one of those Nitro Surge things that I don't really understand what it is, I don't know what it is, I just know people are talking about it, and there's Nitro Surge tins, and it's like, I want one, even though I don't know what it is. And yeah, I don't know. Are you a Guinness drinker, Aveen?
Unfortunately, not really. I'm weird. I'm not really a big beer or wine fan. I'm more of a cider.
That's all right. That's okay. What are you a kind of sweet cider, dry cider? What are you?
Wait, I'm a big sweet tooth.
So would you, let me guess, are you going to go for like a pear cider?
No, more like mixed berry, to be honest.
Oh, that's sweet. That is just sugar in a glass.
Just sugar. How I like it.
That's just sugar in a glass. There was a time I liked all that kind of stuff. I've just kind of grew out of it. I've lost my sweet tooth, and I kind of think I OD'd on cider. I think it's just one of those things. I think I just one year went a bit mental when it was hot and drank too much Magners and sickened myself, and just haven't went back to Magners, Bulmers, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, you can't beat a good old pint of Guinness. Look, we are going to be talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife in just a moment, but I thought, you know, since we've got you both on, we haven't had either of you on the pod for quite some time, and you've all been up to exciting stuff. Even you've moved house, and you've been rather busy over Halloween. I know Halloween feels a long, long time ago already. We're nearly at Christmas, so you were telling us, you were pretty busy up over Christmas, over Halloween.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of events, mainly as Cruella, who has become my new favorite character. I just got to run rampant around streets and shops and all that sort of stuff, and it was so much fun, and it was amazing to finally get out to normality a little bit again. I've missed being able to like get out in costume and interact with people like face to face, because normally I used to get that at Comic-Con, but I don't really get that anymore until next year. But having like this little bit with events, and especially working with the kids, is just been so much fun, and I've missed it so much.
And I'm guessing it's been a lot of fun. I know you've kind of alluded to that, but cosplaying as Cruella with the kids?
She's been so much fun. I honestly, at first, I didn't think I was going to like her that much, but she's become my new favourite diva. I just get to walk about and act as if I'm so much bigger and better than I am. Like, my favourite thing is when people turn to me and be like, you look amazing, and I'll be all like, oh, I know, you don't need to tell me twice, but please do, because I love to hear it, and then walk away, and you always have a wee good giggle after that. and she was so much fun. And then my favorite part was I used to get to chase people down for their dogs and just get to play with their dogs for a good bit, which was amazing, because before, like with other characters, it's not really in character to pay all attention to the dogs, but this time it was like the best excuse and it was so much fun.
So here's the thing. I must secretly cosplay as Cruella, because anytime I go anywhere, I just talk to dogs. I talk to dogs before I talk to people. That's the honest truth. Because you can't fall out with dogs. You can fall out with people. But, you know, dogs are just, as Ricky Gervais says, dogs are just amazing. Dogs are just the best. But anyway, you mentioned there you've moved home. How has the kind of cosplay costume inside of things handled the move?
It's been very chaotic. Like, to be honest, I've been here about a month and I still don't know where all of my costumes are, because they're kind of here, there and everywhere. But now it's amazing because I finally actually have a space to actually keep all my stuff together, which will hopefully eventually happen. But now I have my own little like studio, and in one corner there's my desk to do my makeup, and in the other corner I'm getting like a backdrop set up with then like lights, and I'm going to get a camera and stuff down the line so I can work on that. And I have a table that I can actually like work and start to actually build my own costumes, so I can start learning how to like sew and build armor and things like that. So I'm really excited because I feel like moving house is actually going to level up my costume abilities, even though it's probably going to take a bit to get used to it. But yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, you're just getting your own office now. Is boyfriend trying to move in on this space? Because Evine set the ground rules pretty early on, because this lovely space here is meant to be my office. But if I move my little camera over here, now I'll get caught out because no. And you can't really see it. But it's become a joint office now, and slowly and surely my wife is kind of trying to take over more space. So set the ground rules, set the boundaries early. You know, just it's your space and yours alone. Bill, what would you say? Because you have, by the looks of it there, you've got your own little space, your own little office / man cave, possibly.
Yeah, but it's like, I daren't touch anything because it's like Jenga. It'll just all fall down. It's like I have to throw some Tetris shapes to get in and out of this room. The amount of junk that's in it. It's crazy.
I literally have Tetris in my room.
It's crazy. I mean, just if I move that over a little bit, you can see we Transformers collection there. Just, well, it's not even collection. It's stuff I've bought that I haven't put away yet. And one of them is the Ecto-1 Transformer. Ooh. And the DeLorean Transformer as well. But no, this place is a shambles. I kind of need to burn it down, start again.
Well, I've had a readout in mine, and I've made myself a little bit more space. But I know, like, probably February time next year, because I'm trying to have a clear out, because I've realised that, well, Banderflix has kind of been going for 10 years. And I've built up a lot of stuff, particularly since we started venting in 5 years. And I had a massive readout of stuff. But I'm clearing out. I've got a load of like accessories and stuff for cameras and stuff I'm getting rid of and kind of clearing out. And hopefully just going to get some new stuff and get some new camera stuff for next year when Panterflix is bigger and better than ever. And hopefully the pandemic is a little bit further down the line behind us. But let's not talk about the pandemic. Let's not dwell on those things. Bill, talking of things coming back, and even mentioned Comic-Cons, you've been at a Comic-Con, and it's not just a Comic-Con here in Ireland. You went on, You went to a plane to go to a Comic-Con. So dish, bitch. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, went to London Comic-Con last weekend. That was hiving, absolutely hiving. But yeah, it was pretty good. It was over the Olympia in London. So we stayed over in Hammersmith there. And yeah, such a really good con. The child and the wife, they dressed up. I didn't. I couldn't be arsed, to be perfectly honest. I just wanted to walk about. And I did. I walked about. I got a lovely Grail toy that I was looking for. Got some graphic novels signed by some of my actual favorites, Simon Furman, and
Clearly not your favorite, Bill.
Simon Furman. Simon Furman was.
Simon Furman has been on this podcast many, many years ago.
I like Simon. He did the Transformers con there about 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I got him to sign some stuff that he had there. So that was kind of cool. And I bumped into, just by chance, at a Comic Con, as you do, I bumped into Sacha Dhawan. Now, he was doing signings anyway, but we were just, like I said, I just like dandering about. And he was on his phone, and he looked up, and he saw me. He was just standing on his own. And I just started talking to him. So I got a selfie with him. That was nice. And I met Lance Henriksen as well. That was a big thing. Got a photo with him.
Because you always get those guests. Like, I mean, I don't think you can quite see it behind me, wherever it is somewhere. It's like, there's that one guest. I'm quite happy. I know there's a lot of people. I'm sure maybe between the two of you, you've both been to probably more cons than I will ever be to and I've ever been to. But I'm quite picky when it comes to who I get photographs with. But I know it's only like 20, 30 quid, but I am picky. I know there's a lot of people I know and people that have been on this podcast before who just get a lot of photographs with people. And that's great. I mean, if that's what you want to do, I'm very picky. The one person I've let myself pay to get a photograph with so far is Robert Englund, just because it's Freddy Krueger. It's Freddy fucking Krueger. So I've got to go for that one. I suppose we've had a lack of cons for a little while. And I haven't had that guest yet that's kind of made me kind of go, right, I'm going to pay for you. But I don't know, you know, was Lance everything you wanted him to be, Bill?
It was like a conveyor belt, but he was a really nice guy. We were actually in mid-conversation whenever the photographer was like, you know, can you just move it on? Like, because you're only supposed to like maybe have 10 seconds. But he wanted to talk to me about the T-shirt that I wore. Because the T-shirt was the chest burster coming out, so blood all around the T-shirt and stuff, and he thought it was fantastic.
And what way were they doing the photographs, Bill? I mean, I'm just wondering, with social distance, I know that's kind
there
of...
There was none.
None, okay. And how did you find that? I mean, that was one of the things I wanted to... How did you after being probably for maybe 2 years since you've been to the con, how did you find it?
I actually found it very refreshing, just to not worry about that sort of stuff at all. It was great. And the celebrities and all, I mean, they were happy to put their arms around people and that sort of thing. So, no, it was definitely refreshing. It was good to see that sort of element of life coming back.
Yeah.
And may it continue.
We can only hope it continues, and I know we have the Comic Con coming to Belfast, well, the Econ Centre next year. Even, you know, are you missing the cons? You know, someone that I know who's I've been to, I think once or twice. I've met you at a couple of cons, like Dublin. I would have met you at a couple of times. You know, I suppose you're missing the con scene, missing cosplay comrades, friends that you've met over the years. So, you busting to get back? Have you been tempted to venture away from Ireland to kind of get to a couple of cons, or I suppose is the house move kind of taking up a lot of that time?
I think I'm going to wait to leave Ireland for a con for about another year or two, but already I've bought my Dublin Comic-Con ticket. I'm only going for the one day, just because of COVID still being here, and I'm just worried in case it gets like postponed or cancelled again. So I'd just rather have one ticket than have the same thing happen last year where I'm stranded in Dublin for about a week with food poisoning. So I'd rather just try and go one day. But honestly, my biggest struggle right now is trying to pick which cosplay to bring, because I've counted over lockdown, I've made over 80 new cosplays. So it's just trying to figure out which one to bring, but knowing me, I'll probably make a new one to bring. So
it's going to be Cruella. Come on, it's going to be Cruella.
I don't think so. I'm honestly thinking about the Dr. Octavius. I think now I finally have the room to build a costume. I might try and have a go at his tentacles.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first, listeners. So look out for Avian at Dublin Comic Con. And when she's as Cruella, when she just kind of goes halfway through, she's like, you know what? I'll keep that for next year. Right. Okay. So, well, you know, thankfully, you know, shockingly, none of you have asked you what exciting things have been going on in my life, but nothing really. I've just been working the joys of kind of returning to retail life, been working away. I've had a bit of a retta, as I've mentioned, so that's about as exciting as it is. So I think with that, we shall move on and we shall get stuck into this week's big review. That, of course, is Ghostbusters Afterlife. And before myself, Avian, and Bill share our thoughts on the film, let's play a clip.
Can you stop breathing in my ear?
No.
You guys, this is kind of stupid. Are you sure you didn't see, like, a raccoon or, like, a possum?
There!
Is that a
free-floating metal muncher? Definitely class 5.
Okay, what do we do?
Let's get him.
What?
Let me get a photo first.
Oh, it has a gunner seat?
So that's a clip of Ghostbusters Afterlife. Bill, I'll let you do the honours. Do you want to give us a bit of setup? Do you want to give our viewers and our listeners a little bit of setup about Ghostbusters Afterlife? Not so much the kind of production side of things. Just, we'll start off by talking about just the plot and our thoughts in the film. So it gives a bit of setup.
Okay, basically a sort of family that's maybe down and out. They inherit a house out in, not in a city, but in a small town in rural America. And the house is not all it seems. The area is not all it seems. And some familiar faces crop up.
Okay.
That's summed up in a nutshell.
That's, you've left a lot that we can talk about and pick the bones over. When we kind of get into the spoilerific territory, Bill, you've set us up, so I'll let you kind of get the ball rolling. I know how you think about this because you've been very vocal about it on social media. So what was your thoughts on Ghostbusters Afterlife?
I liked it. I liked it. It's very good. I thought it was a very... I thought it was a really good sort of sequel, reboot, whatever, if you want to get into that sort of territory. But I'm not the only one that said this, but it's a film with an awful lot of heart. I mean, it is, you know, it is where family is the, you know, it's the center core, whether it's a family that you choose to be with or whether it's a family that you're born into. It's that sort of, you know, it gets you into that, you know, primeval thoughts and themes.
Bill, are you implying then that this is the movie for Vin Diesel and his love for all things family?
No spoilers, but he does the voice for that wee ghost.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
He doesn't. I'm reading that up.
That's Bill Taylor's lie. But because I want to come back, because you were claiming, Bill, and you were a bit wary about this. You were a bit wary and you didn't know if I would bring this up or not. But, you know, you do claim, Bill, that Ghostbusters Afterlife is directly attributed back to you.
I'm not proud of it, Jim.
Well.
I know where that's, yeah, you want me to regale.
Yeah.
I love the way
it's like I've peer pressed you into this, and you're like, you told me this story, and then you were like, oh, by the way, we can't talk about this in the podcast.
Can't talk about this.
And then you, as soon as you said that, Bill, it's like, we're going to talk about this on the podcast.
We used to have a big sort of framed poster of Ghostbusters in our living room, and it was there for, it must have been there for quite a long time, for quite a number of years. It was there. A big A0 poster of Ghostbusters. Who you got to call? And we were redecorating or thinking about redecorating. And we were big fans of Walking Dead at the time. So we thought, well, sure, we'll take that poster down and stick Rick Grimes up. So took the poster down. I put the poster in the bin. And this is no word of a lie. I keep getting told this all the time. The next day, the news came out that Harold Ramis had died. So I dug the poster back out of the bin. It's here somewhere, folded up. And and that's how we got Ghostbusters Afterlife. The rest is history.
Yeah, it's directly attributed back to you. There we go. We've got you to thank for Ghostbusters Afterlife. So
you're welcome.
There we go. You're welcome. Who are you going to call? Bill Taylor. Bill Taylor will get the job done. But
who's next on the bucket list?
So Aveen, this is where we'll open up to you now before I share my thoughts. Generally, we'll not get into spoilers and specifics about the plot. What did you broadly think of Ghostbusters Afterlife?
I actually really, really liked it, and it actually blew my expectations out of the water. But then again, I had quite low expectations because of the 2016 film.
Now, can we clarify at this point? You're judging the 2016 film. You haven't seen the 2016 film?
I've seen some of it.
Okay.
I'm not proud of it, but I've seen some of it. And from what I did see, I did not enjoy. So, but from what I remember from that, and from what my opinions were on that, I kind of had over this film, and I still literally went to go see it the first showing on the first day it came out, but I still kind of had dampened views on it, and I wasn't quite excited for it. And as soon as I walked out of the theater, I literally had to go to the bathroom for a minute to continue to cry. So if that says anything about how much I enjoyed it.
That's okay. You seem to cry a lot in the cinema on a previous podcast when you went to see Wonder Woman. You cried at that, so it's good. I cry at the drop of a hat, Aveen, so you're amongst friends here.
We all cry. It's fine.
It's good to cry. There's not a thing wrong with crying. If you want to cry, have a cry. There's nothing better. When you need a cry, just go for it. Don't try to bottle it in. So you've both been pretty positive about it. If I'm honest, I've mixed feelings about it. Now, I still like it. I want to clarify that at the very start of this. I like Ghostbusters Afterlife a lot. I enjoyed my time in the cinema, as Brian Mulholland said to me many moons ago when I came out of, I forget which Marvel movie, and I was a bit mumbly grumbly, and Brian turned to me and said, "Were you not entertained? Were you not entertained?" He went full gladiator on me, and I went, "Yeah, it was." He said, "That's isn't that all?" And I was like, "Yeah, okay, I get you." So yes, at the start of this, I will say I enjoyed the film, I was entertained, and we see some familiar faces back, which I'm glad to see. I think McKenna Grace is outstanding in this, and I forget the name of the other young actor from Stranger. Finn Wolfhard. Yeah, I think he does. He's not given as much as McKenna Grace to do, but I think he does his best. Paul Rudd, who can just do no wrong, sexiest man alive, apparently. Paul Rudd, I can't remember seeing Paul Rudd with a bit of a beard before. We see him with a bit of a sexy beard going on here. I think he's very much perfectly cast as this movie's Rick Moranis-esque character, but he's not as goofy as Rick Moranis in the original Ghostbusters. But There's two things I do not have, not issues with, but I do have niggles. The first one, and it's interesting both of you think about this, part of me felt like I was always going to like this because I'm hardwired to like it, because it plays on all my emotions. As Bill mentioned, it is a film with a lot of heart, and it unashamedly wears its heart on its sleeve. But I do wonder, is it doing so to kind of, in the same way like Marley and Me did many years ago with its emotional pornography, where you watch a dog get put down and you basically feel the director going, if we're talking about Aveen, we're talking about crying, where basically you're told, if you don't cry, if you don't get emotional from this, you're a bad person. And I did. There's a part of me that does feel like this film, in a weird way, is almost constructed to force that emotional response out of me. But I still think it's a sweet film. I don't know. I mean, feel free to jump in, either of you, to see what you think. I think the film
does. There's been a lot of talk. I mean, a lot of people posted stuff on Facebook saying that this is the perfect film. I love it, Jim, but it's far from perfect. Mm. You know, I'm a bit like you in that. There's definitely a couple of plot holes and plot flaws, where you're sitting going, why did that happen? That's a bit weird, you know. And you know, we haven't got into the spoiler territory yet, so can't really elaborate. But there's also a few wee bits that sort of didn't sit right with me in sort of Ghostbusters canon. It's like, right, okay, this is a bit weird. Because this film ultimately blows away all the stuff that we got in the Ghostbusters video game in 2009, which at the time we were told this is canon. This was as close to Ghostbusters 3 as we were going to get. And the storyline that, you know, it delves into the evil Shandor myths and all this sort of stuff. And it's a really good game. And, you know, it's the whole cast, voice cast. You know, it was literally Ghostbusters 3. This was the apparently based around the script that they had for Ghostbusters 3. So, you know, this film kind of it takes all that away from us.
That's,
I wasn't happy about.
That is true. Although I do think, and I could be wrong, there's a sequence when McKenna Grace's character is kind of playing about with the proton pack when she gets the proton pack eventually, when she discovers it. And I felt like there was a little nod to the video game. There's one of the little bits that it focuses in on, going, I don't remember that being in the movies, but I'm pretty certain. I'm 99, well, I'll be honest, but 10%, not 99%. I'm 99% sure that is a little thing that's in the video game. It's not so much in the film, but I could be wrong. But yeah, I hadn't actually thought about that, Bill, because I mean, I love the video game. I don't know even if you've I don't really know even if you're a big gamer. I think you are, aren't you?
Kinda. I have the game, but I haven't got around to playing it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. As Bill said, it is as close to Ghostbusters 3 as we were told we were going to get, and then as close as we would ever get after the passing of Hal Ramis. You know, that's the thing. Like, I will say this at this point, the film deals with, I don't want to call it an issue, but the Harold Ramis problem, the fact that he's not there very well, and it makes the character of Egon Spengler much more front and foremost of the film in a way that I was not surprised by, but also surprised by, if that makes sense. I mean, we're venturing closer to spoilers, but by the end of the film, when there's appearances by some old faces, I thought that was quite sweet. I mean, I'll not lie, Evian's talking about crying. I mean, I didn't well up. I think that's because there was a small child behind me kicking the back of my seat at that moment. I did think, you know, I thought that sequence, without going into spoilers, and we will talk about it, I thought it was handled really well. But then it comes back to that thing that part of me thinks, going, am I being manipulated into this response by basically saying, like, this is so full of heart, it's for Harold, there's no way I couldn't not like this. But I will say this, there's also sequences, and this is not spoiler because it's in the trailer, there's sequences with Ecto-1, like Ecto-1 just driving through a cornfield. There's something about that Ecto-1 and the DeLorean, Bill, you've many mentioned both of these cars in from Back to the Future, and the Batmobile from the Michael Keaton movies. Those are just cars I just think are the epitome of cool. I just think they are just iconic in cinema. And there's something about, you know, moving, as Bill mentioned, to moving away from New York to, I think it's Somersville, I think is the name of the town that they moved to, and taking it to this slice of Americana that's heavily idealized. It's like something you'd see in The Last Picture Show. I think there's I like that idea of moving it away from New York. But also, like, the fact we have Ecto-1 driving through a cornfield, being raked around by a young character. I thought that was fab. I love that sequence. That was something I didn't felt that was manipulating me. But just near the end, there was part of me who did feel like, I was like, sitting in my seat, as someone who loves Ghostbusters, am I just hardwired to like this moment, to have an emotional response at this minute? I don't know, but then so many films do that. I mean, so it's not a criticism. The other thing I want to say, and this is where maybe we might get into more kind of argy-barginess, and it'll be interesting to see what you think, because I made this point in the TV show. I've mixed feelings about Ghostbusters Afterlife in a way, because I kind of feel deep down the trolls won. The vocal minority that made the kind of nastiness about Ghostbusters, the 2016 film, which I didn't like. I'm not a sexist. I didn't like the 2016 film. And my problem with the 2016 film is not with any of those four women. It's Paul Feig. Paul Feig's the guy who dropped the ball. The script wasn't sharp enough. The direction wasn't sharp enough. He just didn't suit. And that was the thing. It's like, you get this comedic talent. Like, Ghostbusters, as much as I didn't like it, it introduced me to Kate McKinnon, who I love. I think she's fab. She's probably the one of the few things I really liked about that 2016 film. But the nastiness that emerged, and we're seeing it this week. I mean, earlier this week we saw, was it the Conservative MP criticising the fact that everything's being retooled with female-centric roles, that men apparently, bullshit, have no role models anymore because, you know, all they've got is the craze and, you know, oh, that's such a note of shite. But I don't know. I never had an issue with having an all-female Ghostbusters. I felt that the plot had to be great to do it, to justify it, and it wasn't. It was just a very meh cinematic that just basically took the franchise, it thought it had guaranteed box office dollar, and produced a mess of a film. And like, did we really need to see Chris Hemsworth dancing about? I mean, hey, I'll objectify Chris Hemsworth as much as anybody. Dreamboat. But, you know, I don't know. I thought it was a mess, but as much as I didn't like the 2016 film, there's a part of me, I can see your hand up, Bill. Part of me did feel like the trolls won. And I know it wouldn't have worked, but as I would have liked even even the most subtle of references to the 2016 film, just to make it feel as if it's like, okay, yeah, we get you. I mean, we're not going to erase this from history. But look, I know, as I say, I didn't like the 2016 film. But there's a part of me who does feel that the trolls, and it's the vocal minority, let's be honest in that. It's an obnoxious minority, small amount of people that are just really loud and horrible. And I thought it was horrible, nasty what happened. I can't remember the name of it. Is it Leslie Hope?
Leslie Jones.
Leslie Jones, that's the one. Like, I think she pretty much removed herself from social media as a result of that. Yeah, I think she's harsh. Coming back now.
I thought that was harsh.
Yeah, but you had your hand up, Bill, so I know you're clearly going to disagree.
Yeah, disagree. I liked the 2016 one. I know I was in the minority. I absolutely knew that I was in the minority. I understand why people don't like it, and I think they don't like it because they hold the originals in such high regard, and that's fine. I get that. I totally get that. But I don't know. I saw it in the cinema and I laughed my bollocks off at it. I thought some of the stuff in that was hilarious. Now, a bit of context. Paul Feig and the writers of that were some of the writers, some of the top writers of The American Office. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of humor. And if you like that kind of humor, you're going to like some. I'm not saying everything in that film was great. It wasn't. It's another one that's got a lot of fucking issues and stuff. And, you know, but there was funny moments in it. And, you know, I like Melissa McCarthy. I like Kate McKinnon. I like Leslie Jones.
Yep.
You know what? And I like Kirsten Wake at times. Don't get me started on Wonder Woman 1984. Oh, fuck. But anyway, and I like the bad guy in that. I like the story, and I like the bad guy. I thought the bad guy was pretty cool. And the special effects were fantastic as well. You can't diss the effects. It was, you know, with the sound effects and the lighting effects for the the proton packs and the particle throwers were fantastic.
Well, if I can throw in, I don't think I will say that just before I get into my little rambly point, and we'll come back to you, Evie. Compared to the original Ghostbusters, and even this, I actually find the proton packs, the Ghostbusting equipment, it looked a little bit cheap. The actual, like, the proton packs, I felt looked a little bit cheap in comparison to the originals, but the special effects are fine. Here was my big gripe, and I wrote a piece about this for the website back in the days when I actually wrote stuff for the website. I'm just too lazy now. But my issue was, and it's coming back, I want to bring it back to this as well, because pretty much all the cameos we had in the 2016 film, the same people are back doing cameos here again. Okay, they are cameoing as the original characters, and I think it's not a spoiler to say that we haven't got into specifics, but I felt like the 2016 film did this thing, said, right, we're going to do a clean slate, we're going to do our own thing. It's easier for us to say, right, the original films in the 80s, and I think 84, 89, if I'm right.
84, 89.
Okay, it's just original for us to give us a clean slate for these new Ghostbusters, say, right, those films didn't happen, and we're going to be our own thing. That's fine. Okay. You need to tell the marketing people that, because I think it was in the first trailer, it's like 20 so years ago, four scientists then had to change it to four friends, save New York, save the world. And you're like, right, okay, you're doing your own thing, but you're trying to pull all this nostalgia from me, from the originals. And then we have the cameos coming in. And Bill, as much as I didn't find it unfunny. I did laugh. I already mentioned Kate McKinnon, but the Bill Murray cameo is one of the worst things ever.
Oh, why?
The Bill Murray cameo, it's literally like, Bill, we've got you for 10 minutes. This is what we need you to do. And you're like, really? That's what you get Bill Murray back for? The Ernie Hudson one is the only one I felt that kind of worked. I thought it wasn't funny, but I felt it worked. The Dan Aykroyd one was like, okay.
That's silly.
It's silly.
Just for a catchphrase?
Yeah, that's it. They had all this nostalgia for the originals. And it was like, right, yeah, but we're doing our own thing. But no, you're not. You're just kind of reminding me of the original Ghostbusters. Go off and do your own thing. And do your own thing with the proton packs and your own kind of... I know I'm repeating myself, but that was my issue with it. It was the fact that it was... building itself is going to be its own thing, but it was just dripping with nostalgia, as does this. But this kind of makes sense because it's a sequel. It's not really a sequel to Ghostbusters 2. It's a sequel pretty much to Ghostbusters. It follows on from that because it's not a spoiler, although it kind of is. We have Gozer coming back. And I think as the film gets into its final act, that's where my niggles really appeared, because it has all this nostalgia, but those references and those nods to the original film, it starts to stamp a lot heavier on that. I mean, when some familiar faces do reappear, they're just repeating dialogue from the first film. Pretty much repeating just dialogue from the film. And I kind of felt like I wish you could do a little bit more. But Evan, I've rambled on a bit. I know you haven't seen a lot of the 2016 film, but no, you're not fussed on it. You've definitely seen bits of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, from what you saw of it, you were saying earlier on you weren't a fan. So what was it that didn't work about that film that you just took a dislike to?
For me personally, it's the actors. Like, it's nothing that I have anything against those actors personally. It's I just don't feel like they're the best for a Ghostbuster film. Same with like Chris Hemsworth as well. And because of that, I always see those actors and always associate them with like mum's night out films, if you get me. So whenever I see them in a thing...
Bill, Evine's talking about like people our age now when she says like mum's night out.
But anyway, yeah, I got that reference. Yeah,
but like mums, like wine mums who finally need out from the kids and they're going to watch like a girl's night out film where they're actually really not going to pay attention but like talk to each other in the back the whole time as an excuse to get the dads to look after the kids kind of film. So whenever I see those actresses, that's what I associate them with. So whenever I saw them in a thing like Ghostbusters, it was like, these actors don't fit here. it's just kind of feels weird. And from what I also saw as well from like clips of like the scenes, it also just kind of felt more for like a mum and her kids more than actual like Ghostbuster fans personally. I just thought some of it was just kind of cringe. And like Jim said, kind of like unoriginal. Like, don't get me wrong, like I did laugh as well at some of the bits, because probably because I do love The Office and I know one that it was Office writers. It makes sense, but it still wasn't funny enough for me to be like, yeah, I want to put that on again and watch it.
Yeah, I don't think I've rewatched it in a long time. I don't know. I mean, I got through it fine. I watched it. The only point in my life, Bill, I have come close to Bill Bullshit Taylor level of kind of anger in a cinema is actually the post-credits thing in the 2016 version. Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I didn't like that either. It was like, are you fucking kidding me? Why are you stomping over old ground? And yet, here we are.
Here we are. We want to be back messing about in the old. Yeah.
Nostalgia sells.
Nostalgia. It'll always get bums on seats. So look, I think we've talked about this enough. I think we will venture into spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen Ghostbusters Afterlife, I don't think you should really listen anymore until you've seen the film. So yeah, so if you haven't watched it, go away and come back. Maybe listen to an old podcast, maybe to listen to an episode of Disney or Crime Scene to Screen or Talking Cosplay with Gabrielle. Go away, still listen to something banterflixy, and then come back and listen to this. So we're going to get into spoiler territory. We're going to spoil away. Bill, do you want to just start the ball rolling, talking kind of as spoilerifically as you want to, things you like, things you didn't like? I think we've talked around it, so even if people are still listening and they haven't seen Ghostbusters Afterlife, if they just don't care, if they're sociopaths and they just don't care, or they just can't be arsed finding the pause button or trying to think of anything else to watch or listen.
It's voice activated anyway, so it's Alexa, pause.
Yeah, then just the whole thing
just never shits itself.
Oh, Alexa, sorry. There we go. I'm back. Okay, Bill, so get the ball rolling. Spoilerifically, I think this film, one of the things, I know I said it was, part of me is a thing where I think it's maybe cynical. I don't think it is, because we have Jason Reitman, the son of Ivan Reitman, directing here. But we have the film, as I alluded to earlier on, it solves the Harold Ramis problem. His absence caused by his death, it solves it quite sweetly in the fact that it makes Egon Spengler still very much front and centre of the narrative. And I don't know, I mean, how did you find that opening where we know it's Spengler? I mean, it's they're kind of, which I liked. I liked the fact that they weren't trying to do kind of the Star Wars Marvel thing of using kind of people's faces, digitally recreating their faces right from the get-go. More on that in a moment. But they don't have that right from the get-go. At the opening, it's like, kind of, you see the little hint of glasses. We know who it is. I don't know who it is that's kind of doing that little bit of acting.
It's Bob Gunton.
Is it? Right. Okay. Yeah, he's
Bob Gunton.
Physically, he very much has Spengler's frame. And we know who it is. And I love that sequence. I love that sequence at the start. I know, I think Hamish Calvert, who was on the TV show, didn't like it. I did. I liked that sequence. I found it kind of, we have, is it the PKE meter lighting up? And it kind of, it indicates kind of there's a spirit in the room. And I thought that was quite sweet. In a way, we've just watched Egon Spengler die. And I thought it was still a little bit sweet. I liked that. And I mean, I love the fact, and even I'll come to you, I mean, the fact that they're able to solve the Harold Ramis problem in a much more kind of believable and making Egon Spengler part of that plot in the same way that, like, in the 2016 version, it's literally, okay, it's just kind of, there's his face on a, is it a statue? I can't remember. He's the head of the university, I think, or something, where they're studying, and it's like, okay, that's just, it's, and it's like the first, one of the first cameos of sorts, because it's like, all right, we've got the Harold Ramis one over and done with, we can move on now. I felt in this, you know, McKenna Grace is just the perfect, but I mean, she's fab. She's an absolutely fantastic actor. And I mean, it's good to see her being front and center. I think as Hamish Calvert made the point in the TV show, you know, she's so often playing younger versions of characters, or she's a side character, or she's not a major character. She's very much front and center of this. And between her and the Little Character podcast, who made my ovaries tingle, if that's physically possible, I thought he was great. But as I say, even I kind of went, I asked you a question and went off on a ramble. So your thoughts on kind of the fact that Egon Spengler is still very much front and center within this Ghostbusters movie.
I really enjoyed how they did it. Like the opening sequence of him like running away from whatever that was. I'm assuming it was Zool. I don't know. Or whatever spirit it was. But I really enjoyed it. And all the little hints that it had and the way how it set up, it was really nice. But I'm not going to lie, I'm really slow for it. So it took me a good minute to realize it was meant to be Spengler. I was just sitting there just thinking that this was some other guy that this thing happened to. And then they solve what happened. And then I finally clicked on. As soon as I saw the reader thing, I can't remember the name, it's out of my head. But whenever he was using that, I was like...
Do you know what I really wanted you to say, even? I really wanted you to say, like, not until, like, the final... In the finale, when...
When he was a ghost.
When somebody might have appeared, you go, oh, so that's who Dirt Farmer is. Ah, it all makes sense now.
Yep.
No.
I'm not that slow. I'm not that bad. Give me some credit. But at the end, it really got me because for me, Ghostbusters is such a big part of me because, as I probably said before, growing up, I wasn't really allowed a lot of boy things, but Ghostbusters was the only thing I was allowed. And I remember I had the Ghostbusters 2 DVD and I would watch it on repeat to the point where I scratched the disc because I watched it so bad, even though it scared the crap out of me as a kid because of the painting and the baby, it freaked me out. So being able to finally like grow up and have this new film was really exciting. And I as well had my doubts because of the whole like Spengler situation, but the way how they did it, I thought was really sweet. And that's why it got me so emotional because he was one of my favorites. So whenever they did that, I was like, oh, he's still here.
Although, I don't know, this is the point where we can talk about issues because doesn't he create a giant ghost trap?
Yeah.
Why does Egon Spengler not get pulled into the ghost trap?
See.
It's meant to be nice, Jim. Shut up.
I know it's meant to be nice, but I ruin nice things.
It's the physics of the film that sort of annoyed me, to be fair. It's like, the things in the garden need a huge electrical charge. And it's like, it breaks down all the time. It's so unreliable. It's like, it's all right. I'll just fire a proton beam at it. Bang. Because that's the same kind of electricity.
Electricity's all the same, Bill.
Kind of annoyed me. And
the thing that really annoyed me was how they said at one point how the fire station was turned into a Starbucks, and at the very end, last credit scene, you see Ernie Hudson bring the Ecto-1 back to it. But I was just, how could he?
There's a few. See that whole Ray stance bit in the middle of the film. I think, I don't know, I had a major issue with that. I'm like, this kind of stops the film dead here. This is just an exposition canon. It's just giving us a load of fucking information that we probably should find out somewhere else. And the thing that really got me about that was he claims that Egon took all the gear, and yet all the Ghostbusters end up at the thing at the very end with their gear. And it's like, right? But Egon took it all. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
I do have issues with the fact that they literally just show up. They literally it's like camera left, camera pans left, there they are. Although talking about, like I mentioned earlier on, in the aforementioned emotional moment of the film, the emotional climax when McKenna Grace is picking up the proton pack and she's about to shoot, and then we see another hand. It's like, oh my God, it's Egon. I'm going to go. And there's a small kid, you know, kicking my back of my seat. But that same small kid, which is, I love, because I keep saying I'm going to be obsessed about this. I'm going to be 40 next year. But that little kid is maybe 2 or 3, could be 16. I'm really good at I'm really bad at judging kids' age. But he had this moment where it's like, the Ghostbusters? And I was like, nah. I had the exact same response as you. I literally was like, the Ghostbusters. But I was like, literally, it's like they just roll up in all their gear and it's like there. And as I've already mentioned to you, it's already mentioned, they just start to spout off dialogue that's pretty much identical to what they said before. I think they kind of play with it a little bit, but mm-hmm. I wish that them coming back and
yeah, you wanted it to be more spectacular than what it was.
Yeah,
I think they needed to be there for the last third of the film, not the last 10 minutes. They and needed to be there for the last third of the film.
And do you know what I wished as well? I wish Sigourney Weaver. I mean, yeah, we have Dana Barrett coming back, but it's a post-credits thing. And
yeah,
I wish her character had more. Maybe it's just availability and issues like that. And maybe with COVID, I don't know. Because I'm trying to think, was that shot in a way that maybe they weren't in the same room? I don't know. Because I think... No, this was shot pre-COVID, I think, wasn't it? It was just delayed. So
the film was supposed to be out, what, last April or something, yeah, wasn't it?
It was delayed. And I'm going to talk about post-credits things. I think even you've mentioned this. I wish that the Ernie Hudson bit hadn't been a post-credits thing. I think that was a nice way to end the film. Mm. And I love his speech. I love his speech because, you know, Ernie Hudson is someone who has... I mean, you know, I love Ernie Hudson's. I've had the pleasure to not meet him, but be in his company at the Dublin Comic Con a few years ago. But, you know, because it's the idea, I mean, his character has been a bit marginalised over the years within the Ghostbusters franchise. You look in kind of certain marketing campaigns where it's just the three white guys. It's just the three white guys, and you see it. It's like here we give him this lovely speech about someone who these guys, okay, they gave me a chance. I did that for a while, and I went on and made some money, and now I'm going to bring it back. That should have been in the movie. It shouldn't have been a post-credit sting. It's just a little. It's a small hill I'm prepared to die on, but I wish that hadn't been a post-credits sting, if that makes sense. And you know, it's clearly setting the foundations for future films. I think this has done well enough at the box office. It's hard to judge. I think it's hopefully going to set the foundations. Go on ahead, Evie.
It has. Apparently, it's made $60 million in the first week and has knocked Eternals out of the top, which I was shocked by because I heard more hype for Eternals than Ghostbusters. I didn't actually hear people start talking about Ghostbusters until after it came out. I heard people talking about Eternals for weeks, probably months, but I heard literally no one talk about Ghostbusters. I thought I was the only one.
Yeah, Ghostbusters was a lot more fun than Eternals. Not that I didn't dislike Eternals. I just feel off the two. What would I rather watch? I would rather watch Ghostbusters Afterlife for a second time. Well, I'm glad that it's found its audience. I'm glad that it has found an audience at the cinema. And I think because of the fact it's a family movie, and I think that's been a big test for this kind of current state of where we are in the pandemic, that families can return to the cinema and feel safely. Because it's not, as I know yet, I don't think it's going PVOD. It's not going kind of the rental that I know James Bond has just went on rental for, like, whatever it is, $15.99. I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I've pre-ordered it. I'm the person who's saying I've got all the niggles with it, but I've pre-ordered the new Ghostbusters. I'm going to happily watch it. I'm looking forward to watching all three of them kind of back-to-back. I would have loved a little nod to Alvigo the Carpathian, because coming back to you mentioned Ghostbusters 2, even. I mean, I can take that further. Bill's probably heard this story before. I went to see Ghostbusters 2 in the cinema and had to be removed from the cinema with all and left and lost my Ecto-1 toy and all the Ghostbusters at the cinema because I was absolutely terrified by that sequence when the lightning comes out of the painting. I was, I'm up there, it's terrifying. Oh, have we lost, Aving? No, we haven't.
Once it gets to 10%, I'll have to flip the charge.
It's okay. I was terrified by that, but I'm also the person that decided to, many, many years ago, put myself into Ghostbusters 2, and I had a radio that could record noises in the room and played Ghostbusters 2 on the big TV and added in, myself in as the fifth Ghostbuster. So like I'd have been about 10 trying to do a very terrible New York accent. It was just a bit of a Venkman. Basically, it was like two Venkmans. So I have that cassette somewhere, audio recordings of me adding myself into Ghostbusters 2. So I mean, like, as I say, I was hardwired to like this. I always was. So we have, we're into spoiler territory. We can't talk about this. We've mentioned that we have some familiar faces coming back. We've mentioned that we have Egon Spengler, you know, the Hal Ramis problem being addressed. And without a doubt, the film's dedicated to Harold Ramis. It's dedicated, which I thought was a nice touch. I thought it was a very sweet touch. But we also have the return of Gozer as well.
Yeah, I was like, seen from the, I think it was the second trailer, I was speaking to the Sixth Sense guys, and I said to them, look, I have a funny feeling about this. And they were like, what is it? And I said, well, they're in that second trailer, they have Tari Koon in a silvery gold dress. And I was like, and they also have Paul Rudd running away from a terror dog at Walmart.
Yeah.
And I said to them, see if it turns out that them two are the gatekeeper and the keymaster. I'm going to walk out.
But the signs that you didn't walk out, Bill.
I didn't walk out, but I was right. I was proved right. And to be honest, I think they probably, I don't know, I think they put maybe too much in that trailer for that sort of, for people to work that out. Mm. I'm sure I'm not alone in working that out.
No.
It kind of annoyed me, to be honest, because you know how I feel about Force Awakens.
Everybody in that audience in Belfast knew how you felt about that. Everybody
knows how I feel about Force Awakens. And I was a bit afraid that this was going that direction. And in some respects it has, but in other respects it sort of hasn't. The one thing I will say that kind of, I don't know if they dropped the ball or whatever, but the whole Gozer thing and, you know, Shandor and all that whole sequence, it's like, it didn't have the scale of danger that the original film has. Now, whether it's the setting or whatever, because New York, you know, you've got people, you know, you've got the streets of New York breaking open. You've got people scared. You've got all the religious people. You've got the mayor of New York, Lenny, losing his shit. And the walls bleeding and all this sort of shit. You've got all this. Whereas you don't really have that in this film. In this film, the worst that's happening is there's an earthquake every so often. So you don't really get the scale that, all right, Egon has left his family to go and save the world. And it's like, show me some of it. Don't tell me. Show me your film. Show me what's happening. It's like stuff happening in Egypt. It's stuff happening all around the world. I don't know. But we never get that. We never get that sense of peril. That would be a major take from me anyway.
Yeah, well, we never really, like in the first two films, I mean, it was New York century. The world
but you
was...
had the people. You had, yeah. Like, you always had shots of, like, loads of people, or there was something bad happening somewhere. Even in number two, you have the Titanic returning, you know.
Better late than like never.
But yeah, you know, you had that sort of stuff. Whether it's played for jokes or played for fear, whatever, you don't have that here.
Well, I suppose the only thing, I mean, because you've got a smaller community, I mean, there's a couple of sequences where we see, and there's a couple of nods to sequences from the first Ghostbusters. I think, is it that the taxi driver from the first one, the possessed or the demonic or zombie goat?
You have the zombie the
taxi driver. He's back. He's having a coffee. There's things like that, which, yeah, I get. I mean, my favorite sequence in Ghostbusters now, when I watch it, it's a bit when Rick Moranis' character is running away from the devil dog and he's banging on the restaurant and not one fucker cares. It's
no, just like, nobody cares.
That's just another day in New York. Nobody cares. Yeah. Do you know what I would have loved for a film that had such heart? And I mentioned this in the TV show and I know it ventured into spoiler territory. I guessed it wasn't going to happen because he wouldn't come back for the 2016 one. I would have loved a cameo from Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
That would have just been, for me, the icing on the cake. The icing on the cake that would have just went, right, okay, we know that this film is full of heart, but Rick Moranis, fair dues. I love Rick Moranis. He's retired and he's not coming back, but I would have loved a cameo from him. What about you, Evian? Would you like the cameo from Rick Moranis?
I actually would have really liked it. I probably would have liked him bumping into Annie Potts and stuff. And seeing like them and like see each other again and like catch up and something like that. But again, I understand why he didn't come back, because like you said, like he's retired and he's not coming back. So I get and respect that. But I just wish he could have spared a little bit of time for this, seeing that it is such a big franchise. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people know him for. Like, that's what I know him for personally. So I feel like it would have been right to at least hold off his retirement for one last cameo. But again, I respect that he didn't. So it's kind of like, I get why he didn't do it, but I also wish he did.
Yeah, fair dues. Ryan Reynolds has been the only person, I think, that's been able to get him out of retirement. I think it was for an ad for the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I think he did, you know. So fair dues to Rick Moranis. He's not coming back. But we have
Annie. Is he not coming back for the... is he not doing a cameo in that TV show for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids on Disney Channel?
He could be. He could be. So maybe he'll just sell out to the House of Mouse. There we go. All respect for Rick Moranis is gone. He's going to sell out. Like everybody, the House of Mouse can just get anybody they want.
They got the dollar.
Yeah, they got the dollar. That I will admit, that was the one thing. I think had that popped up, or had Rick Moranis appeared, and I know it would have been too jokey to have him coming back as, you know, in the final sequence as the fourth Ghostbuster or as another Ghostbuster. Because part of me would have liked that when they're looking for, we need another stream. It's like, just to have Rick Moranis' character showing up. It's like, yeah, that would have got me. But, you know, they went down the heartfelt sweet route, so I'm not going to complain. And look, I've thought about this, and I know I mentioned that the film does, like, particularly in its finale, it borrows so heavily from the first Ghostbusters. It retreads its thing. But then part of me was kind of thinking, well, that's just what Gozer does. We need the Gatekeeper. And we need the... Oh, Gatekeeper, are you the...
Keymaster.
Keymaster. Are you the Keymaster? Are you the Gatekeeper? That's just how Gozer comes back. And I guess that's their
shtick. Did you notice who played her?
I thought it was Olivia Nunn. But
Is it Olivia Wilde?
Is that, yeah, Olivia Wilde? That's who I thought it was, but I couldn't see her credited on the IMDb. But IMDb
doesn't have all the credits. Yet, or they didn't have.
But I did sit there the minute she appeared. I was going, "That's Olivia Wilde. That is Olivia Wilde. It has to be Olivia Wilde." And when I went on IMDb, it's like, maybe it's not, but clearly it is.
And it had J. Jonah Jameson in the coffin.
Yeah.
I can't remember his actor's name, so to me, he's always Jonah.
J.K. Simmons.
Yep.
Yeah, and let's talk about that
for a second. That was a bit of a waste, I thought. It's like, he's on screen for maybe 30 seconds, has a line, and then gets torn in half. And I'm like, fuck, you're a bit of a disrespectful god. This boy who's been keeping you going.
Well, you never know. I mean, you might get alternative takes and deleted scenes, and that might just be a case that's just been cut. You always get that in films where, oh, I've got this great big idea for this, and then when you kind of watch it in the edit and you go, oh, well, it just slows everything down or doesn't... I would have liked... I mean, you're going to get J.K. Simmons. You would have liked it for more than just literally sitting in a booth, sitting in a glass case, and then, as you say, Bill, a couple of bits of dialogue. But,
Seemed a bit of a waste.
Can we also pause for a minute? I mentioned my love for McKenna Grace, who's just fab in this. But McKenna Grace's jokes throughout the film, and I think even Paul Rudd has a few. I laughed at quite a few. I'm not ashamed at all to admit that I laughed at quite a few McKenna Grace's, is it geology? Or kind of all that kind of geology jokes? Isn't this thing where she said that's a geology joke? It's like, I laughed. I laughed. I thought the back and forth between her and Paul Rudd, and we haven't really mentioned Paul Rudd. I know we mentioned he's in it, but I thought he was fab.
loves him so much.
He's definitely the comic relief in the film. Mm. He doesn't really do much else, though. I mean, he's sort of almost like a mentor-y kind of character to McKenna Grace's character.
Yeah.
He, you know, he kind of speaks her language kind of thing. He's the hip, cool summer school teacher or whatever. But he's good. And as I say, he's the key master as well or whatever.
And both Aving, both you and I have my Stay Puft hat on and my t-shirt. You have a Stay Puft t-shirt on as well. We kind of knew Stay Puft was coming back. That was in the marketing campaigns. It was in the ads. I quite like how they did it. The fact that he was big in the first one, now he's tiny. And it was very Gremlins-esque. Yeah. That little sequence, it was very Joe Dante, like when the Gremlins are loose in the house in Joe Dante's film. It reminded me a lot, like there's a sequence in the blender and they're just the little cutest little Stay Puffs and it's like, you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. It's like, boom, splat. But I like that sequence. It went on a little bit and it was surprisingly just how much they showed in the marketing campaigns from that sequence that I thought, I know the Stay Puft little Gribblies come back near the end of the film for a little smallish cameo with podcast, but I like that sequence. Yeah, and also like we're talking just because it's in my head when we're talking about callbacks and nods. I mentioned I thought there was a little callback to the Ghostbusters video game, the greatest callback, the callback to the animated series, and the gunner seat. I mean, I just love seeing the gunner seat. It's like going, yeah, because Amber was going to go, I never knew there was a gunner seat in Ectomorphs. Like, you clearly never watched the cartoon. There was.
I know I wanted an Ecto 2 as well, the helicopter.
And I'm nearly certain in the cartoon, is there an Ecto 3 or is that just in the toys?
Oh, Ecto 3 might be the helicopter, is it?
No, I think Ecto 2 is the Ecto 3 is like a bike thing, but I think that might be more toys than actual animated series.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, were you a fan, Aving, of the animated series at all?
They aren't really bad. I didn't know there actually was one until this year, so I'm going to try and find it to watch it.
Oh, you have a treat.
I know, I'm so excited.
You have a treat ahead of you. Now, the only thing I will say that annoys me, and this is another one of my small hills I'm prepared to die on, I don't know if it's as much of a niggle for you, Bill, is I think by the time they get to series 2 or series 3 of the animated series, voice actors change. And it's like there's a different guy doing the voice of Venkman, I think.
But did he not die? That was Lorenzo Music.
You could be right.
Did he not die because he also did Tommy Gummy and Gummy Bears on Garfield.
There's a few of them change, and it's like it's just my niggle. It's like when Batman.
That's 1987, Jim.
I know, but that's the small hills.
That's when I was in first year. It was first year.
No, don't. Let's not pull on that thread.
It's depressing.
Let's not pull on that thread. I mean the animated series. I mean, there's an episode of the animated series which is technically, I suppose, Ghostbusters 2. Because it kind of follows on from the events of the first film.
That's right,
Stay
Puft's back and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I love the animated series. It's one of those first cartoons. It was that.
Toys.
Yeah.
Toys were great.
Toys were fab. All that kind of stuff. Probably it and maybe the Spider-Man series. Animated series were the first kind of cartoons. And Transformers, I know we've mentioned anyway.
Have you seen the toy line that they're doing for the film?
No.
You can get the new Ghostbusters ones, and you get the older, it's older Peter, older. You can get those three, but there's a two pack, and it's McKenna Grace's character. I forget what her name is in the film, and Ghost Harold Ramis.
Ooh, I might be making purchases on those.
I'll send you a picture of it after this.
I might be. Look, I'm trying to think. We've talked for over an hour. We've talked about everything from House Moving, Cruella de Vil, London Comic Con. We've talked quite a bit about Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters Afterlife. I think, for all my niggles, I'm still positive about it. I still like it. I do have issues with it, but then it's it's me just maybe with my film critic head on and just maybe looking for things. Like you say, Bill, this rivals Vin Diesel for its love for all things family. And I think...
And so many levels, though, of the family, because not only is it like, you know, it's a film about, you know, family, whether you choose them or family, whether you're born into them, but it's also made from a production point of view. Mm-hmm. It's family as well. Because it's, you know, we haven't even mentioned the music, the soundtrack.
Yeah.
You know, Elmer Bernstein's, like, music is plinky-plonked all the way through it, and it's beautiful. All the different takes on the themes and stuff.
I do think the film does a little too heavily use the score. It's a bit like the video game, to an extent. Like, the video game, I mean, it's a what, maybe... 8 hours, 9 hours to complete, and you just kind of wish you had added in a little bit of original music into that, as opposed to just so heavily using the score for like an hour and a half, 2 hour film. There's the cues again, as you mentioned. Yeah, I mean, I love the score to the original Ghostbusters, and I think that the song in the closing credits, I think, is written and performed by McKenna Grace. I'm nearly certain. Right. Yeah. And it was annoyingly catchy because I was kind of sitting in my seat, kind of bopping away.
But, that's the one downside as well. The soundtrack is nowhere near as good as the classic.
Mm.
Sorry, it isn't.
But thankfully, there's no Panic at the Disco terrible version of the Ghostbusters theme, which we got in the 2016 film. Yeah, I mean, it's a good film. I enjoyed it. I have issues with it. There's niggly issues with it. But as I say, coming back to Brian Mulholland. Was I not entertained? Yes. Yes, I was entertained. And at this point, I'll throw out last comments, Aveen, Bill. Anything you want to kind of mention just before we go? You know, any closing comments on Ghostbusters Afterlife?
Okay, I'll go first. I really loved a lot of the imagery in it. One scene that like stands out to me the most, and honestly, I would love to make it like my laptop, like screen cover, is whenever... the kids are on the Ecto-1 chasing Muncher down like a cornfield, and they have him like in the beam, and it's just that over the sunset. I just thought like that little clip was just beautiful. Just the way how they did it was stunning. Like the lighting and stuff I thought was really nice, just because as well I'm also a sucker for like warm tones. So the fact that they had that a lot, I was just like, oh, this is really pretty. Another thing as well that I also loved, just personal, and I'm going to bring up the fact that I'm gay again, is how they mentioned that Gozer is not a he or a she, and how they're like, oh yeah, pretty woke for a god. And I was just like, that's really cool, because I also remember growing up how I actually really loved Gozer and how they looked, and now finding out that they're not a he or a she as well, I thought that was really cool. Just personal thing.
No, perfectly, that's perfectly fine, a perfectly valid thing to make up. I remember noting down that little reference about what you, as you say, I very woke for a god. I woke it because I think it's, I forget, is it the girl, the kind of potential love interest for Flynn's character makes that point, or is it?
Yeah.
It's a perfectly valid point. I mean, yeah. Bill, any closing thoughts for you? Bill's closing thoughts.
I'm gonna have to go and watch it again. Actually, I don't know when. Don't know why I'll get the time, but. Yeah, I'm busting to go and see it again. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's, yeah, like both of you have said, I mean, not a dry eye in the house at the end of it. It's just, that's just, to me, it was a beautiful send-off. Beautiful. Yeah. It was incredible.
Do you think, I mean, I know I've already said last questions and closing comments. I think it leaves the franchise, I mean, I come back to that post-credits thing, that they're clearly hoping that this film earns enough at the box office. Even you've mentioned it's done well enough so far that we're going to see another installment. Like, again, I come back to Niggles, and I've been really positive there. I'm coming back to Niggles. It doesn't, this film isn't the passing of the guard that we maybe thought it was going to be, because in many sense, like, we have McKenna Grace's character and Spengler's family. They're there to play a part within this kind of goodbye and send off to Egon Spengler. But it's not really them taking over the mantle. We might well see McKenna Grace in another film. I hope so. I really fucking hope so. Yeah. But, you know, this film feels, again, it's minor niggle. It's like we need the old guys to come back and do it. And I come back to mean, that's why I mean, pardon me, like, it's not McKenna Grace and Spengler's family saving the day at the end of the day. It's literally the Ghostbusters, Venkman and co popping up, Ray popping up in the last 5 minutes and saving the day, which, okay, is something maybe we can discuss that another day. But I don't think we're clearly going to get, if we get another installment, it's going to be a passing of the guard. It's going to be Ernie Hudson almost as a kind of Tony Stark-esque kind of a financier. I don't know who would be the equivalent of him in the comic book movies. Not maybe, well, Bruce Wayne, I suppose, in a way. The Bruce Wayne to the Ghostbusters to be able to back their kind of their ventures. And it might just not necessarily be in New York, because I would recommend seeking out, I forget what they're called. They're like fan movies that do the Ghostbusters, but I think it's in, is it Boston? I think it's Boston or somewhere. It's not in New York. It's kind of like the Ghostbusters franchise, and they kind of set it off in New York. There are two, I think there's two movies. I think one of them is against Freddy Krueger. It's a film made for absolutely, that they didn't make any profits from it. I would recommend seeking out. It's probably available still online. And it was a lot of fun. But, you know, it might be that these next films, they don't take place in New York. They maybe move away from the New York setting. But I suppose when you've got the Ghost House being reopened, you've got Ecto-1. Avian, you've clearly got your hand up, so...
Personally, I kind of hope that they don't make any more films. As much as I love Ghostbusters and I love this one, and if they do make more, I'll probably be at that same standard. But I kind of hope they don't, and I kind of hope, like, in a way, to me, that end credit scene, yes, it is very obvious that they're hoping to make more films, but to me, I'm hoping that they're not going to. And to me, that final little bit where I can't remember the name of the machine that was going off again at the end, that was kind of going off to kind of just let us know that, yeah, even though they got rid of Gozer, that, like, ghosts are still there, and the adventure of ghost hunting is still about us, and we can still, like, dive into that if we want, but the Ghostbusters are, like, have been laid down to rest. And that's how I kind of interpreted that end credit scene, where whenever he brings the car back, to me, even though I know he says he's going to fix her up, but to me, he's going to bring her there to fix her up, but lay her to rest, and that's it. They're not going to be busting anymore, because just personally, I don't want to, because I've kind of always noticed that whenever they do that, it then isn't as good as the last one, and then you're disappointed, even though it might have still been good. You get what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you see, we need somebody to deal with the ghosts. We don't have Derek Acora anymore. He's not about, you know. So who are you going to call? Derek Acora is not there. I don't know Yvette Fielding. I don't know how busy she is. I don't know if Most Haunted's still going. You know, she can only do so much on her own. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just Alexa flashing away. I don't know. You know, bringing back that reference from earlier on. Who knows? I don't know. I think the fact, it's a bit like, what film was it we were talking about recently? Not so much in the TV show, and it was like, well, this is going to be a fuck-up. What film was it? Was it Leo? Oh, yeah, sorry, Halloween. There we go. It's like Halloween, when they brought that back, you know, with the David Gordon Green movie, which was a perfect ending to the franchise. And then it's like, well, it made a lot of money, let's do Halloween Kills. And it's like, it's a bit shit. But Halloween ends, it's going to be good. It's going to be good, kids. That's what they're promising us. And then if it's a bit shit, they'll do another one after that. But they've clearly invested a lot of money in this. It's done well at the box office. If the numbers add up, they will. Or maybe they'll do a TV series spin-off, because everything has to be on a streaming service now. I don't know. I get what you're saying, Eivind. But, I mean, how many times have we had that in movies where you go, that's a nice way to end everything? You know, we've already mentioned Fast and Furious and now Vin Diesel. You know, you had the perfect send-off with that, and it's like, no, we need to make more money. It's making so much money. Keep it going, baby. We need the dollar. Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah. But I completely agree with the sentiment of what you're saying, and I would like that, but I've just become a realist. It's going to happen to you, Vin. You're still young and idealistic and optimistic. Yep.
It's not going to happen. I'm going to write a very angry letter to the directors and writers and be like, you're not allowed to make any more Ghostbuster films because I say so.
But you see, no one reads letters anymore. You'd have to write an email.
Strongly worded email.
I'll just show up to their house. Like, It's very easy to stalk people these days.
Do you know what, Evan? You don't even write an email. You just have to write a tweet. It's going to be like Ghostbusters 2016. You're going to start a whole thing. You're going to become a troll. That's what it is. And look where that... Well, hey, the trolling worked for clearly because people got Ghostbusters Afterlife. And whilst I've mixed feelings about how it came to be, I still enjoyed the film. So, yeah, Bill, we've already given you your closing moments, but any further closing moments on any further closing comments on what we've just kind of rambled there the last 5 minutes?
No, not really. I mean, it's just, it is a lovely, lovely, lovely film, and everybody should go and see it.
Yeah, do, so that they make another one, and then Avian gets really, really angry. So there we go.
There's no doubt that there's bound to be something else is in the pipeline. No doubt. There's no doubt in my mind. It'll be a TV show, I think. I'll do the next.
An all-female, a non-gender-specific Ghostbusters. Yeah. There we go. There we go. That solves everything. Or just Ghostbusters, but they're all dogs.
Yes.
I'd go for that. I'd be happily for that. It's all the devil dogs.
But they're all Zool.
Yeah. I'd quite happily watch that. you know. Anyway, so look, I feel we're getting silly. Not that we haven't been silly already. We've talked quite a bit. Hopefully you've enjoyed this pod. It's great to be back podding. We haven't podded, as I said at the very start of this episode, for quite some time. We're going to try and make time and do it again. We're still doing it remotely because the pandemic's still out there. People, variants upon variants and upon variants. So we're just being...
Yeah.
We're just being as sensible as we can. One day we will be able to all get by everyone back in the studio and we'll be able to do a proper podcast recording. I still think the last time... Actually, both of you have been on the last two, not together. Even the last time we were in the studio, I think, was with yourself when we were talking and doing the Dublin Comic-Con preview, and look how that ended up. And Bill, the last time we had you in the studio, we were all talking about Steve Martin and Martin Short. Look what happened there. So maybe it's best, coming back to Bill's... Yeah. Ghostbusters poster, maybe it's just best we keep things going as they are now, because if we change, bad things happen. Okay. So look, all that's left for me to do now is thank my two guests. So thank you very much, Bill Bullshit Taylor.
Thank you very much. And, I hope that doesn't catch.
I've been trying to get it to catch for a long time, Bill. Depressingly, it's not.
I hope just it doesn't.
Yeah. Avian, I don't really have kind of a little kind of Avian insert comment here, reference Henry. So I'm just going to say, Avian Henry, thank you very much.
Fair enough. Thank you very much.
And thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back pretty soon with another podcast. But for now, until then, goodbye.
This has been We Need to Talk About Movies. Thanks for listening. For more information, visit banterflix.com. See you next time.